Hello. Good to see you all. Those of you who have attended here for a while know that I sometimes talk about having the post-it experience, right? And the post-it is when you get a revelation from God. It's like this hairy arm comes out of the sky and hands you a post-it and tells you exactly what you need to know. And there's often a choir of angels going, oh, everybody, good job, good job. Oh, yes, I like this church. Okay, so I had a post-it experience the other day. Yes, not a literal hairy arm of God with a post-it, mind you, but I heard something that was very important for me to hear. I was minding my own business. It was a morning like any other morning. I woke up. I climbed out of the pile of dogs on my bed, shook off the dog hair and the fleas, and and all of a sudden I heard this inner voice say, everything has changed for the better. I said, really? Everything has changed for the better? And it said, yes, everything has changed for the better. I have to say, it kind of surprised me. because in my personal life and in the world, it doesn't seem like everything has changed, really. I didn't really notice any big sweeping changes in my own life. Who knows what's going on in the world, but in terms of my own personal life, I didn't notice anything really different. The other reason it surprised me is that it's not like me to say stuff like that, right? I mean, I know I say it up here, but sometimes sometimes in my own head, I can get very dark and pessimistic and fearful about the future. Okay, I've confessed. But I said, you know, why don't you stick with this idea that everything has changed for the better? Because that's what all the mystics say. That's what I say when I'm up here. That's what I say when I'm feeling that essence of life pouring through me. That's what we all say when we pray. Everything has changed for the better. Everything has already changed. Everything is perfect, meaning inclusive of everything. And it's our relationship to what happens that makes the difference in our lives. So I decided to stick with that, and that's what this talk is about. The realization that everything is all right. Everything has already changed for the better, and everything is evolving, even though it may be in a distressing disguise in your life right now, it is evolving for the better. I think we can count on that, and I want to help us count on that, and also help us discover particular tools to help us really believe that everything is changing for the better. It's a constant evolution. Everything is changing for the better. Everything has changed for the better. Okay, you with me? All right, okay, hope so. Okay, so the book that we're featuring this month is, it's actually called True Refuge. I think I put it in the program incorrectly. True Refuge by Tara Brach, who is a Buddhist teacher, lives in Washington, I believe, and a very well-known Buddhist teacher. In Buddhism, you know, they talk about taking refuge, and often it's the refuge in the three jewels of Buddhism. I'm getting very nervous because there's a real Buddhist sitting in the front row, and I'm just a dilettante. So anyway, the three jewels of Buddhism are the Buddha, emulating the Buddha, which is the Buddha, and then the Dharma, which is following the teachings of the Buddha, and then the Sangha, which is like community, right? Wrestling with our community. And those are the three jewels that are usually spoken of, but she's speaking about three other jewels. And I read the chapter on presence. And the reason that she happened upon this topic of writing this book was that Tara Brach, the author, was experiencing a severe health challenge. She had been healthy and athletic and fit for most of her life, and then she started having this degenerative disease where she was unable to do things even like walk on the beach. And she was so distressed by it. The book starts out with her in the prologue, talking about how she was distressed about that and how she had to actually step back and do a practice that helped her become immersed in the perfection of it and immersed in this idea that everything is changing for the better. The practice that she talks a lot about in this book is mindfulness. Mindfulness. The practice of mindfulness that Hugh describes so beautifully in the reading, that's this sort of detached knowing, this detached interest in what is happening with us, a detached curiosity in what's happening externally and internally. That we can take, I'm going to talk mostly about inner work because that's what our center's about, we can take our reaction to anything, and usually we work really hard to push it away, right, to medicate it away in one way or another with all kinds of stuff. I don't need to make a list, perhaps. Anybody, how do you medicate your... No. I'll tell you mine, Candy Crush. Oh my gosh. Major. And actually, candy too, if you want to be really honest. We often push what is happening internally away, and she suggests that instead we practice mindfulness, that we stay present to what is happening. I think of it as like holding a little baby bird. We have a lot of babies at my house. There's a lot of unauthorized reproduction going on at my house. And the biggest unauthorized reproduction was a flock of birds that was born in our aviary because we forgot to take the eggs out. They sat on the eggs, and it's a good sign. You know, when birds reproduce, it means they're happy. But we have, what is it, seven? Yeah, seven baby cockatiels to add to our flock, which is a lot. But anyway, you open up the egg box, and all the birds go, like that. It's so cute. But if you pick one up in your hand and just hold it, I think of that as how we can hold what's happening inside of us. You don't want to hurt it. You just want to hold it gently. You don't attach to it. You just hold it gently like a little tiny baby bird, and you can actually even love it and treat it with tenderness and treat it with kindness. And then you put it back where it belongs, and ultimately, the baby bird that you hold grows wings, and it flies away. With enough careful attention, it flies away. I had a revelation the other day. Another one. I have them all the time. I had another one where I was actually sitting at David Kerrigan is teaching that class on the book of Matthew that we heard about in the announcements, and he was talking about how Jesus was a teacher of the law. And I think a lot of us, perhaps, I often ask this question, but a lot of us have been raised in religions that were kind of demanding and demeaning, right? That's why a lot of people come to this teaching, is that we're very open to all kinds of orientations and all kinds of spiritual paths and like that. And I think a lot of us perhaps were raised in religions that said, my way is the right way and you have to follow these rules or else you are going to hell. Okay, good. I heard a different answer over here, but you know. Yeah, so going to hell, yeah, I like that. I wasn't going to say that, but I was going to say on God's beep list, but going to hell is good. Yeah, I mean, no, it's not. Oh, I cracked myself up, you know. Anyway, I had this revelation sitting in David's class where he said that Jesus is a teacher of the law, and I thought about the Ten Commandments and how Jesus said that he came to teach the Ten Commandments or the Jewish law, and he came to not change it, but to fulfill it. Thank you. Thank you. This is perfect. Y'all are writing my talk for me. I just love it. Thank you. Fulfill it. And also to carry out more of the spirit than the letter, right? The Ten Commandments are things like, you know, don't kill, don't murder, no false gods. It's funny, I had a dream about David Kerrigan last night, as a matter of fact. You want to hear it? I dreamed that I was up here and I was talking about the five precepts in Buddhism, and one of them is that you're not supposed to lie. And I said, up here on stage, it's just like the second commandment. And I said, right, David? And he said, not even close. Because we all know that do not bear false witness is the third commandment. Not even close. It's the ninth commandment, okay? All right. So anyway, all of those things, and then Jesus shifted it into much more about love, I would say. In love, the three laws of Jesus that I talk about are love God, love your neighbor, and love yourself. And that's three in one, right? Those are the three laws of Jesus. So we've got the Ten Commandments, we've got the three laws of Jesus, and then we have the five precepts of Buddhism, which are, I will try my best with this, I'll just say them the way that I remember them. Don't murder, don't lie, don't steal, don't take intoxicants, and stay away from bimbos, okay? You get the gist, right? You get the gist. But I thought, you know, sometimes people use those things to punish themselves, and they use them to stay out of the experience of heaven on earth because they feel like they're shaming themselves by not following these particular laws. And I thought, oh my goodness, what an opposite perspective I'm getting right now about what those laws are. Those laws are keys to being in that sweet place that is the kingdom of heaven. They are the keys to having a great life. You know, here we talk about cause and effect. If you follow those laws and be super, super conscious of what you're doing, then your life will be great. If you watch your mind, then your life will reflect that experience that you've created in your mind. And I thought about how it's a lot like the internet. Work with me here, okay? We are having major connectivity problems at my house, and every time I call customer service, it gets worse. But I've been thinking a lot about the internet. And what happens, pretend like right here in this room, even though you may or may not have your devices on, the internet is all around us. It's all around us, right? The internet has always been here. And then you have these rules that you have to apply in order to access the internet. Like make your, like make your modem talk to your router, right? But the modem is kind of like mindfulness. Mindfulness is the modem. The modem, mindfulness, opens us up to receive the wonders of the internet by taking what is happening and holding it like that tiny, tender little bird and then evaluating what we want to do with that. Did that analogy work for you? It worked better in my head at home, but, you know. But think of mindfulness as like the modem. It's the receiver. Mindfulness is actually what makes, I think, the fulfillment of the law possible. What makes the law be a source of joy and delight and alignment versus something that is punishing. That works for me. That works for me. Mindfulness can help us do that. So the way that this works, in the book she talks about a couple, a married couple that's having all kinds of problems. And this couple is fighting and fighting and fighting, and they think that they're going to have to get a divorce. The husband goes and sees Tara Brach, who is also a therapist, and she says, "Why don't you practice mindfulness with your wife?" She said, "When you're telling me this story, what are you feeling right now?" And he said, "I feel angry." And she said, "Okay, just hold that anger. Just sit with it. Stay with it. Breathe through it. Don't try and push it away. Just feel it. Just feel it." And he did for a little while. And then she said, "Now what do you feel?" He said, "I feel so sad and so hurt and so not seen." And she said, "Sit with that for a while." And what she asked this couple to do was to, she calls it choosing love, but it's also choosing presence. Choosing to be present with what is happening and the reality, the truth about what is happening within us, and then speaking that in a way that is responsible and kind, knowing that we are responsible for our feelings, right? Without blaming the other, speaking the truth of what we are feeling right here and right now. And this couple said that they had to choose mindfulness, choose kindness, choose presence over and over and over again. But ultimately, it brought them to a new place in their relationship where they felt healed and held and whole. You know, and whether or not we're going through relationship problems, I won't ask for a show of hand. I'm not only talking about marriage, but I'm talking about any relationship. Your relationship with your children, or your relationship with your spouse, or your partner, or your lover, or your employees, or your boss, or what have you. The people that you meet every day, any relationship can benefit from the practice of mindfulness. I had the interesting experience of reading an article about microaggressions the other day. And I was thinking about it and wondering, you know, microaggressions has become a thing, and I think it certainly is important to know how we might be stepping on other people. But could we also, as the receiver of microaggressions, take on micro-responsibility and micro-compassion? You know, I try to think of my own experience with microaggressions, and, you know, I'm a married white female, and I'm not really other than, well, I guess being a woman, you get discriminated against sometimes, but I haven't felt that a lot in my life. But then I thought about being in the public a lot, and that sometimes people are offended by what I say, and they come at me in an aggressive manner. We all talked about the rat last Sunday, right? For those of you who weren't here, you can just listen to it online. I released a rat in Ojai, and there were people that were offended by that. Okay, let me just explain that I released it in the wilderness, okay? I didn't go into somebody's yard. So, anyway, but there are microaggressions coming at me all the time, and you know, I think about what is the response to this? Do I try and change the other people and help them have a better opinion of me? It doesn't really work very well. I hate to say it, but it doesn't work, and God knows I have tried. I have tried. I've put a lot of work into that, and it doesn't work. I change my response to them, and I change my response to myself. If somebody says something about you or me or whatever that indicates that they don't like me, that they don't approve of me, I just look at the capacity that we all have to use that as a weapon against ourselves. Oh, Mia doesn't like me anymore. I know it's not true. Mia doesn't like me anymore. That must mean that I'm a terrible person because Mia doesn't like me, and Mia is God in this moment, right? Don't put any false gods before God. Second commandment, right? I know you love me. I love you too. Yeah. So it's that type of thing, holding that aggression that is coming at you, holding whatever it is coming at you like a tiny bird and just looking at it and knowing that you're not wrong for feeling anything that you're feeling, but just holding it with tenderness and gentleness and presence and being in that presence and seeing where it leads you, where it leads you. It will lead you home to wholeness. You know, I often say that we're homesick for wholeness, and wholeness is a part of this whole thing. Wholeness is part of this idea. Perfect, whole, and complete is just a beautiful phrase because it indicates that there is truly only one, and whatever you're feeling is part of that oneness. So be curious about it. Be inquisitive about it. Hold it tenderly and see what it has to teach you. Is anybody here, you don't have to raise your hands, can anybody here apply this to a relationship in your life? It can be your relationship with somebody in your life outside of you, or it can be your relationship with yourself. Notice how you might be beating yourself up and take that. You don't have to push it away just because you're in a religious science church, right? And we always talk in positive affirmations 24/7, right? I know the practitioners do, right? All the time, right? No, we don't. You know, Hugh talked about the neural grooves in his reading that he did. Our neural grooves, as it said in that reading, take us away from the present moment. But we can restructure them by reaffirming the present moment and just being with what is, being mindful with what is. It's a beautiful, beautiful practice. So a while ago, just a few moments ago, I spoke about microaggressions and I spoke about micro-responsibility, taking responsibility for the smallest things that are happening within us, and micro-compassion. I also want to talk about micro-gentleness in response to ourselves and in response to the world. A few months ago, we had my friend Nipun Mehta and one of his friends, Arun Dada, who is an Indian man who worked with the person who was Gandhi's spiritual successor. And for those of you that were here, for those of you that were not here, it was he sat on this stage and he didn't speak English, and there was a palpable presence of grace in the room. And one of Arun Dada's theories is that when somebody is unkind to you, or when you are unkind to yourself, the response should be gentleness. And if that doesn't work, go gentler. And if that doesn't work, go gentlier, which is not a word and that bothers me, but that's what he said and I'm sticking to it. So what if we could make micro changes in getting gentler and gentler and gentler with ourselves? There's a story in the book about Thich Nhat Hanh, famous Buddhist teacher, and he was visiting a monastery in San Francisco. And the monks were all excited that this famous Buddhist teacher was going to be there, and they really, you know, spit-shined everything and made sure that they were on their best behavior. And he was there for a few days, and then they had an audience with him, and they asked him, you know, what can we do? What can we do to be better? And Thich Nhat Hanh said, well, I would suggest getting up a little later, smiling more, and breathing. Perhaps that's good advice for all of us as we navigate this place called planet Earth, this miracle that we call existence, to get up a little later, maybe, or go to bed a little earlier, whatever it takes. Smile more and breathe. When you are facing something, can we apply that level of gentleness to smile more and to breathe and to hold what is ever happening both internally and externally like a tiny, tender bird and just love it and trust that there is a power and a presence that is greater than what is happening right now that is moving us through this? You know, there's this thing that we often say in religious science that obstacles are opportunities, that problems are possibilities. And I would say, I think I'm paraphrasing Richard Rohr, that conflict or challenge is actually part of completion. If we can embrace all of the parts of our being, then we are whole perfect and complete, not half perfect and complete, or only perfect and complete with the parts of ourselves that we like. And not only does that help us, that helps the entire world. It blesses the entire world when we have that capacity to be whole, perfect, and complete with what is. It's what we say at the end of the I Am Remembering meditation all the time. Open our eyes in love and in service to what is as it is, and so it is. Right? It's a beautiful way to be in the world. So I started this message by talking about that post-it. Oh, coming out of the sky. Okay, everybody. Oh. Good job. Thank you. And, you know, I think you always want to know why something like that happened, why you had this deep moment of well-being and peace and knowing that everything was all right so that you can do it again, right? And I think really what it was mindfulness, that I'd had an intense period of mindfulness. I was up north a couple of weeks ago working with a Buddhist gathering and was around a lot of Buddhists, around a lot of monks, and practicing the five precepts myself with a lot of attention to what was happening, to my reactions to the five precepts and how I sometimes didn't want to do them, right? That's another sermon, but anyway. And so the mindfulness of that led me to a place where I had to do my first talk after being away for a while, my first message here. And I have to say, I never really wanted to be a public speaker. I have a love-hate relationship with the spotlight, and I hadn't done one for a while. And the speaker before me was Judy Pando, and she was really good, you know? She's gonna make me look bad. No. And I have to say, I was a little reluctant to prepare. I was procrastinating. The hair got pulled out of the shower drains that day. The cartridges got changed in the printer. And more things like that. And finally, I decided to reach into my heart and take that little tender bird, that little place of procrastination, and say, okay, you're procrastinating. Do you have to really shame yourself for procrastinating, or can you just be with the spirit of procrastination? Of course, the ego jumps in and says, if you allow procrastination, there's going to be more. You'll never get the thing done, right? Nope, just held it, watched it, and saw that, of course, it was about fear. Will I be good enough? Will people understand? Will people like me? All of the things that you kind of wish you had left behind in high school, right? Junior high, right? But I think that we're all running around, you know, there's a line from Grey's Anatomy where it says, we're 17, we just have scalpels now, right? I think we're all running around 17 with scalpels. And from that place, a plan of action came forth, very much like Thich Nhat Hanh. Stay in bed a little longer. Breathe and smile more. I decided that the world would not fall apart if I actually found joy in the preparation process, and decided to just jump from all of the topics that I like to read about and allow that to synthesize through some force that is greater than me into a talk. And it did, and it felt so good. And I spoke barefoot that Sunday, and nobody complained about my bare feet. And it was really, really beautiful. And you see how available that was? Again, it's like the internet. It's around us all the time, but mindfulness is the modem that draws it in, that helps us restructure those neural pathways that want to run away from what is happening, but helps us create new neural grooves that help us see the truth, because the truth needs the truth in order to be fully functional. That is, the truth of the capital T needs us to tell the truth in order to make a difference in our lives. And so that's what I'm holding for each of you today. To know this beautiful truth of your own beauty, your own power, your own light, your own love, your own capacity to practice mindfulness, your own knowing that nothing about you is shameful enough to put away, to push aside, that everything can be brought out and examined and held with tenderness and grace. Are you willing to do that for yourselves? Is that a yes? Okay, let's do one more. Oh! Good. Let us pray.